1230 AM, W255DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Katherine Watson at the White House, where President Trump is getting ready to leave for a whirlwind trip to the Middle East to mark the agreement between Israel and Hamas. The president leaves Washington this afternoon and will touch down in Tel Aviv Monday morning local time. The first thing on his schedule in Tel Aviv is meeting with hostage families. President Trump plans to be present when the 20 living hostages are returned to their families in what will be an emotional reunion Monday. It's been more than 2 years since those hostages were taken captive by Hamas on October 7th.
I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy says the end of the conflict in Gaza and the release of the hostages could have happened long ago.
This deal has been on the table for over a year, and it's been Benjamin Netanyahu, because of his political considerations domestically, trying to protect himself, has frustrated the ability to find peace and to get the hostages home far before today.
Murphy spoke on CBS's Face the Nation. As the government shutdown enters its third week, it's hard to see how the two sides can come to terms. First, House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
Republicans control the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and unfortunately, they've made the decision to take a my way or the highway approach.
Now, House Speaker Mike Johnson.
They've chosen a partisan fight so that they can prove to their Marxist rising base in the Democrat Party that they're willing to fight Trump and Republicans.
Both men were on Fox. Four people have been killed in a mass shooting early this morning on St. Helena Island in South Carolina. At least 20 were injured. Police say the shooting happened at a bar crowded with hundreds of people. Media reports in Australia say the personal data of nearly 6 million customers of the Australian airline Qantas has been leaked. The BBC's Chris Barrow has details.
Qantas has confirmed that the information, which included names, email addresses, birth dates, and frequent flyer numbers, was stolen from a third-party platform in July, but it has not revealed how many customers have had their data released on the dark web.
In New York City this morning, a wreath laying at the Christopher Columbus statue in Columbus Circle. It was on this day in 1492 that the explorer's first expedition made landfall on what is now San Salvador Island in the Bahamas. A nor'easter is churning up the East Coast today. A state of emergency has been declared in New Jersey. Another storm has struck farther south with heavy rain and flooding. Airports from Washington, D.C. to Boston have announced some delays and cancellations. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns. It's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at hazeldenbettyford.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
Service has more.
As dwindling brook trout populations are a concern across Wisconsin, conservation efforts in Iron County are increasing viable habitats for the native species. Fish population spikes are being observed at Kari Creek and the Tyler Forks River after major culvert replacement and restoration projects. A fisheries biologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Zach Lawson, says post-project monitoring shows a 94% increase in juvenile trout at Kari Creek.
We see a more even distribution of different size and age classes throughout the stream along the entire reach of Kari Creek, which is fantastic, just what we want to see.
Lawson says brook trout are important as a good indicator of high-quality water resources. Despite the fluctuating weather conditions of climate change, Iron County is predicted to be one area in Wisconsin where brook trout will still be able to thrive. Lawson says that's why projects like these are so crucial. Kari Creek, which serves as a nursery habitat for brook trout, had been diverted from its natural channel into a roadside ditch, causing erosion and flooding flooding issues. Improving it meant replacing 9 culverts and an 800-foot stream restoration that cost more than $400,000 to complete. Heather Palmquist with the Iron County Land and Water Conservation Department says most of the funds came through the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Trout Stamp Fund. She says rural underserved areas like Iron County, with a population of just 6,500, could not undertake these kinds of projects. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
More news anytime at civicmedia.us.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 98.9 WXCO.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly sunny for today, a high in the mid-60s. For tonight, mostly cloudy, a few showers around. Lows in the low 50s and a little breezy. A clearing sky as we look on into Monday, high temperatures in the mid-60s. Right now it's 58.
Todd Alba.
Hey everybody, join us next time. You can win tickets to the world premiere of No Packers, No Life at the Marcus Theater in Waukesha, and Jane Matinier is in to talk about headlines. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. Full Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rational Revolution. I am Mark Becker, your host. Oh my goodness. You know, hey, it's another week. We've got a lot to talk about, as we do every week. Thanks last week to Congressman Mark Pocan that came on. If you wanted to hear that, check out the episode wherever you get your podcasts. Check out our social media pages, civicmedia.us. Everything's there, including this episode. And you're not going to want to miss it, because our dear friend, the mouth of the South himself, Mr. Carlton Huffman, friend of the show, is back. What's up, dude?
Well, it feels like I age about 4 or 5 years between each appearance on this show.
I know.
Between all the news and everything that we've had to digest. I mean, my Atlanta Braves go down, yep. Georgia beats Tennessee, but then falls to Alabama. So just on the sports side of things alone, it's a roller coaster. Never mind everything else going on in the country and the world.
Yes. Yeah, you got your Carolina Panthers shirt on, for those of you that are tuning in from the radio. I was looking, you were here last, I think, in July.
I believe so.
It's been a long 4 years, these last couple months.
It doesn't seem to slow down. I mean, no. I, before we really get into putting the screws to this administration, I mean, I do want to give them some plaudits, especially with the announced deal, getting the Israeli hostages that were taken on October 7th by Hamas out of Gaza and returning home to their families, and also ending this, hopefully, knock on wood, ending this horrible war in Gaza that has brought so much suffering to too many on both sides.
Well, you know, we could start there, too, because I wanted to talk about that. And it's, you know, if Trump was the one that brokered this, I mean, I do want to give him credit for that. You know, because I would credit where credit's due. With this show, we talk about how it's not about left versus right. It's about right versus wrong. And I think, you know, even the most stark critics can admit that that was a legitimate diplomatic achievement. You know, it's a huge deal.
Absolutely. And I think that Trump came into this term with a lot more leverage vis-a-vis Israel than Joe Biden had, because Joe Biden was crippled in a political way from the beginning, because you have a large segment of the Democrat Party, which is very sympathetic to the Palestinian cause. And while Joe Biden was very much sympathetic to Israel, gave them the weapons and the diplomatic support that they needed, he still had to hedge his bets a little bit on the public side of things. Whereas Trump, literally in the first term, he moved the embassy to Jerusalem. Yeah. He recognized Israel's 1967 territorial gains officially for the first time. And then also in this term, he bombed Iran. So that gave him tremendous leverage with the Israeli public to sit there and say, I've went to the mat for you. I've actually done something no other American president has done, and that is to put U.S. forces in the firing line alongside the Israelis as they were bombing Iran themselves. So that gave Trump enough leverage to sit there to tell Bibi, enough's enough, that if we get a deal, if Hamas says that they're going to release the hostages, you need to take that deal. But also, if Hamas refuses to take that deal, then we can basically say that they are not good faith actors and Israel can do what they need to do.
Right. I do think that to an extent there was a pretty rapidly closing window on that, however, too, because of all of the pressure from other international countries that are saying we are going to recognize a Palestinian state. So, you know, if Donald Trump was going to broker a deal, he had to do that quickly. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I just think that there's so much that we could delve into on this. But I mean, the bottom line is that Hamas started this war. They are the ones that all the carnage is at their feet in terms of the responsibility for it. We can sit there and say in an even-handed way that 2 years of war and over 60,000 Palestinian dead. I mean, a lot of them were a number of them were combatants, but far too many were civilians.
Yeah.
That everybody on all sides of this can look at it and say, if we can get those Israeli hostages back, if we can return them home, and Hamas is going to no longer be firing rockets into Israel on a daily basis and attempting to carry out what their charter calls for, which is the elimination of the Jewish state, if we can get that deal locked in and people are actually going to participate in it, then all the better for everybody.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. And we had one thing that's frustrating, too, is like, you know, you want I want to give him credit and I want to say that that was a because it was a good thing. But like in that stupid freaking post that went out where he, you know, he's like, oh, look at this. This is all caps. Blessed are the peacemakers. And it's like, good. Freaking the, Lord, man. Like you can't.
The people of Chicago and Portland would like to have a word when it comes to
right?
that.
But then it's like, okay, you want to quote scripture. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about where, you know, the Bible says if you're going to do a good deed, you do that good deed and you shut up about it and let the good deed stand on its own, but not like don't break your back patting yourself on it. You know,
the Bible also says plenty about treating the migrants with
yes,
dignity, treating well. Them with kindness, treating the poor with kindness. And I don't think taking health care away from all the people that are on Obamacare plans and also taking $1 billion out of Medicaid, I don't see anything biblical in that. I can understand from a fiscal conservative side of things that you always want to sit there and make sure that a budget is balanced. But whenever you basically triple ICE's budget, whenever you give tax cuts to the top 1% in a way that is not fiscally responsible, you are showing where your priorities are. And so while we can give Trump credit on helping to foster this deal, and like I said, God willing, we get those Israeli hostages home and reunited with their families, that does not negate all the horrible things that are going on in the streets of Portland, in the streets of Chicago, where we're basically seeing things that we haven't seen since the Civil War, which is troops from other states going into political opposition areas. And we've already seen American citizens shot by federal law enforcement. We have seen children dragged out of their homes and zip-tied in the middle of the night. And it's not slowing down. It's only getting worse.
Yeah, that whole pesky, we talked about it on last week's show, that posse comitatus thing, you know, where you can't, you know, send troops into a city and that's what's happening. I struggle to there's so much behind this. And like you say, it's not getting better. Where does it end?
I could go very black till on this one. I mean, I would say just look at your history book at 1861 is where some of this could end. And that's something that obviously I don't try to be hyperbolic, but let's just face facts. I want to say the last time I was on your show in the spring, I joked about Donald Trump. I shouldn't even say joked. I actually said I think that he would seriously seek a third term if he could thought he could politically get away with it. And the very next week, he rolled out on his website Trump 2028 hats.
Right.
And you already have people along the political lines pushing the limit on every issue that we talked about with Project 2025. I just sit here and say that we are going to likely see a Kent State-like incident. And for those of your younger members of the audience, back during the Vietnam War, we had National Guard troops that were confronted with protesters at Kent State University. And the protesters were getting rowdy. They were throwing water bottles at the troops, and the troops fired into the crowd. And we had American kids dead on American soil at the hands of their fellow Americans. And that's something that I will sit here and say, and once again, people might get their guard up whenever I say it, but I truly think this White House wants that. I can remember whenever I worked with the Trump campaign in 2020, whenever you had the tear gassing of protesters on Lafayette Square, you had them fist bumping, thinking this was a great thing. They even had the poster picture of Trump walking across the square with his aides and General Mark Milley. And they thought it was a political home run. Fortunately, the politics of the day backfired on them, but they learned the wrong lesson from that. They think we did not go hard enough, and they are referring to American citizens as terrorists. And that's basically out of every authoritarian playbook. Whenever you can brand American citizens as outside of the political process, as outside of the constitutional protections that we are all entitled to, that's whenever you see things devolve very, very quickly, and we're seeing it on our streets already.
Do you think, not necessarily he would run again, but and I would it be out of the realm of possibility to kind of use some of these events? I mean, he never lets a good crisis go to waste to begin with, but could he say, well, with all of the violence in the streets, with everything that's happening, we're going to suspend the election, and you know we're because you can't run for three terms, but you can in the case of wartime, you know, just kind of delay some things.
Well, let's look back at history on this one. I've got a historical argument on both sides of it. So even during the Civil War,
right,
while parts of the country were under the control of the Confederacy, we still had an election. Abraham Lincoln, even though it was looking like he might lose the 1864 election until the Union Army captured Atlanta, he still was going to face the political process and honor the political process no matter what. World War II, while we were in threat of a Japanese attack in the aftermath of Pearl Harbor during 1942, and we had American ships literally getting sunk off our shores by German U-boats,
right,
we still had a congressional election. We also, during the Vietnam War, we, even though there were riots in the streets in Chicago in 1968, even though you had presidential candidates killed, like Bobby Kennedy, we still had a presidential election. So there is zero argument to sit here and say that there, if we could get through a civil war and still have a functioning presidential election, there is no historical argument that justifies suspending an election. What I would say, though, I can remember in the lead up to the Civil War, a lot of the southern states basically left Abraham Lincoln off the ballot. He was not even there for people in the South to vote for because the southern legislatures did not recognize the Republican Party. I can, if Republicans were willing to sit there and send false electors to Congress in the aftermath of the 2020 election, I can foresee a scenario where state legislatures, if you're seeing Greg Abbott in Texas rewrite the congressional map for Donald Trump in the middle of a cycle 5 years after a census, I can see him calling up these governors and saying, put me on the ballot and we'll let the courts figure it out.
Well, and you know, it's one thing to rewrite those districts, you know, but I think it's an entirely different thing to rewrite the districts for the express purpose of giving Donald Trump the seats. Like that's, you know, it's politics. I'm like, oh, well, hey, we have to do this. It's just, you know, the changing nature of the population. No. We want to give him more seats. Like, holy crap. You said the thing.
Yeah. Once again, I think I've said it before on this show. Power is the end goal. Like, it is not a balanced budget. It is not social conservative values getting in, enshrined into law, even though that is a side effect of it. It is power. It is total political power and the crushing of the left. You listen to Stephen Miller, who, once again, this is the guy who's the deputy chief of staff.
Yeah.
I mean, he is right there in the room with Trump making a lot of these decisions. You have the attorney general of the United States basically indicting a former FBI director.
Right. And we're going to continue this discussion here with our dear friend Carlton Huffman. We're going to talk about what's the mood of the electorate? What do they think right after this on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network?
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
So my mother is thinking of switching from Verizon to PureTalk, but she's worried the deal sounds too good to be true. Michael, she said, how can those PureTalk people offer me the same basic service as Verizon for so much less money? I said, Ma, go ask Google how much Verizon spends on advertising and promotions. A few seconds later, my mother said, oh my goodness, $12 billion a year? That must be a typo. I'll tell you what I told my mom. It's not a typo. Verizon spends $12 billion a year on advertising and promotions, and their customers are paying for it. Well, PureTalk doesn't spend that kind of money on commercials. Trust me, I would know. That's why they can offer you and my mother unlimited talk, text, and plenty of data on a crazy fast 5G network for just $25 a month. And if you're a business owner, you could really save a fortune. Dial pound 250, say the words Mike Rowe, and you'll get an additional 50% off your first month. That's pound 250, Mike Rowe. Pure Talk. Everything you need and nothing you don't.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses for free. Find a mentor today at score.org.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. We've got our dear friend Carlton Huffman, who was an operative with I totally forgot that you're with the Trump campaign. Holy cow, I remember that. They loved you back.
Mea culpa.
Yeah, well, dude, I mean, you helped the media out. I don't know how much I can say, but yeah, you know what. And moving on, what do the voters think of all of this? I mean, they've got to be smart enough to see through the BS. No.
Well, whenever Facebook first came out, it allowed you to designate your relation status. And so I would sit there and say that old status, it's complicated, applies in this case.
Yeah.
When it comes to Trump's signature issues, the economy and immigration, he is falling down into the 40s and in some cases into the high 30s. So his signature issues that he has always had his brand rely on are basically collapsing underneath him, because we've seen the dollar lose 20% of its value since the start of the year. Gold has gone from 2,500 an ounce to over 4,000 an ounce. You see the job gains have basically ground to a halt. And we got Trump firing the Bureau of Labor Statistics chief because they were given job numbers that he didn't like. So, and he's basically proposing to rewrite all the economic markers, including the times that companies have to report their earnings, basically to try and get rid of any data that is going to counter the narrative. I mean, he even said it just a few days ago that that interest is down, inflation is down, which is clearly not the case. And he said that prices are down, which at the beginning of the year, I was paying $14.99 for a pound of ribeye beef. It's up to $20+ a pound of ribeye beef. So all when it comes to the economy, people realize, okay, he has not made it better than what it was under Joe Biden. When it comes to immigration, they are looking at the ICE raids. They're realizing, okay, we're not just going after MS-13 or Tren de Agua gangbangers. We are going in and going after daycare workers. We're going after factory workers, people who work on the farm, people who keep our economy going. And he's going after them. That's an underreported fact that the labor market and the labor costs is going up for people. And that's another cost on top of the tariffs for companies in this country. Where it gets complicated is that people still look at the Democratic Party and still don't think that the Democrats have really internalized any of the lessons from the Biden years and from the 2024 election. The Democrats have found a mode where they can oppose Trump and they can put like points on the board when it comes to policy, but have they figured out who they are yet? They haven't, unfortunately, and they still have time to do that. And we've, as far as elections, we're actually going to get a good barometer. I gave credit to Wisconsin back in April when in that Supreme Court election, it was a double-digit win in the face of all of Elon Musk money for that Wisconsin Supreme Court seat. In just a few weeks, we get governor's elections in Virginia and in New Jersey. And in every special election around the country, we have seen Democrat turnout and Democrat enthusiasm is dramatically up compared to the 2024 election results. But whenever a lot of money is on the table and whenever the Republicans are fully engaged, we don't have a definitive marker to show where the voters are. We're going to get that here in a few weeks in Virginia and New Jersey.
It's so wild. Like when we were both in the party in Wisconsin, we would talk, and it was kind of common knowledge that in the midterms, we would do better. When turnout's down, we do better. And it seems like that is completely flipped on its head.
It absolutely has. So whenever we were Republicans in good standing, the Republican coalition looked very different. You had moderate suburban voters who generally leans like moderates on social issues, but were fiscally conservative.
Right.
And they saw the Republican Party as their natural home. In the Trump era, it became obviously a lot more populist, and that attracted a breed of voter who, in the past, voted for Barack Obama, especially in the Midwest. I mean, you had folks who voted for Obama both times, but have now voted for Donald Trump three times in a row in a presidential election because he campaigns on grievance. And these are voters who they did accurately diagnose that they got screwed. Beginning in the early 2000s, as we saw outsourcing of manufacturing jobs, we saw the financial crisis where the big banks got bailed out while we all had to deal with the consequences. And while we did have a recovery during the Obama years, that recovery was not broad-based. It was not across the board. It was not evenly distributed. And Trump was able to sit there and say to these people, you know, you're not feeling good about your circumstances. We know you got screwed. I'm going to give you somebody to blame.
I am your retribution.
And that's why the coalition has shifted. And those voters that show up whenever Trump's on the ballot, they do not always show up in the midterms. And that's going to be the Republicans' biggest challenge whenever we head into next November.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I see with the Democratic Party, are they like holding the powder dry and just letting the Republicans just run roughshod because they know that, hey, this is going to, at the end of the day, this is going to work in our favor because they're going to just screw stuff up so bad.
And they would be making the same mistake that they made in the 2024 election. I mean, when Biden was on the ballot, they assumed no matter what people think about Joe Biden and his ability to do the job, they do not want a 37-time convicted felon with with a record of inciting an insurrection at the Capitol to overturn the results of an election he lost. And then whenever they switched to Kamala, they said, no matter the fact that we didn't really have a chance to have a primary and debate the issues, that as long as Trump is the alternative on the ballot, that the voters will always choose the alternative. And we saw that that plainly was not the case. Trump did win the popular vote. And that's something that is painful to admit. And it's a very different reality than what happened in 2016. You can't blame the Electoral College. You can't blame just a fluke. It was a systematic across the board. Donald Trump won the popular vote, and he won with the broadest Republican coalition since Dwight Eisenhower.
Right. And we're going to talk about this, the military and all that good stuff coming up here at the next segment here with our dear friend Carlton Huffman on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stick around.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
You're listening to 98.9 WXCO, Wausau's home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
CBS News Brief. After more than 2 years in Hamas custody, 20 Israeli hostages are coming home. CBS's Catherine Watson.
Israeli officials expect the hostages to be released to the Red Cross before they are transported to Israeli-controlled parts of Gaza and then to southern Israel.
A state of emergency has been declared in New Jersey as a nor'easter makes its way up the East Coast. National Weather Service meteorologist Bob Orovec is watching its progress.
The biggest impacts from the coastal flooding along the Mid-Atlantic and into New England. Strong onshore flow from the storm will be pushing the water inland.
At a museum in Madrid today. Two women slathered red paint over a huge painting of Christopher Columbus's landing in the Western Hemisphere. It was on this date in 1492, on his first expedition, that he reached San Salvador Island in the Bahamas. CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
The Brewers win the series. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers beat the Cubs 3-1 in Game 5 to win the Divisional Championship Series. They'll host the Dodgers tomorrow night in Game 1 of the NL Championship. Pat Murphy on the Brewers able to win a playoff series.
After last year, that was the wild card series. We won the division. Mets were hot. They came back and beat us, all right, at the last inning. They were shell-shocked. We were all shell-shocked to see the room then. And I just said, hey, guys, somehow this is going to help us. And what I think it did is galvanize the group. And then, you know, we've been talking about Uke all year long. And it may sound corny to some, but if you lived it the way we did, you know, Uke's presence was here. And they didn't want to let him down.
Cubs manager Craig Counsell.
I mean, I'm disappointed. I'm sad. You know, I think this team did a lot to honor the Chicago Cub uniform. What did we do wrong tonight? That's kind of what you got. You're stuck on. Why couldn't we get anything going? You know, so it's hard to get past that right now.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. John Candy's family still has trouble watching one of his biggest hits. Candy was self-conscious about his weight throughout his career and did not like the mud wrestling scene in Stripes. Candy passed away in 1994. He insisted on wearing a shirt throughout the entire scene due to his modesty, despite being encouraged to take it off by other filmmakers and cast. You can learn more about what made one of the most beloved Hollywood icons tick in the documentary John Candy, I Like Me, which dropped Friday, October 10th on Prime. When the live-action version of Snow White failed at the box office, Disney got cold feet and halted production on the live version of Tangled. Now it appears the production is back on and has its sights set on Scarlett Johansson for the role of Mother Gothel. There is no word yet on who will play Rapunzel or Flynn Rider or any other cast for that matter. Michael Gracie, who directed The Greatest Showman, will head up the project. You had me at Scarlett Johansson. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 98.9 WXCO.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly sunny for today, a high in the mid-60s. For tonight, mostly cloudy, a few showers around, lows in the low 50s and a little breezy. A clearing sky as we look on into Monday, high temperatures in the mid-60s. It's 60 right now.
My name's John Driscoll, proud member of the Patriotic Millionaires.
When I was CEO at CareCentrix, I doubled entry-level wages. The impact? Productivity went up, turnover went down, and the company was successful. When employees are off the clock, they're real consumers, the consumers that drive the economy with their spending. By paying employees a fair wage, we're actually helping out all of us and giving our economy the best chance to succeed. I'm John Driscoll. I'm a patriotic millionaire, and I approve this message.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my community and those I care about safe from threats. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, Representative Jody Emerson of Eau Claire talks about her proposals to provide better support for higher education in our state.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Fighting in the streets. Very prophetic from the Foo Fighters here on the Rational Revolution. We're spinning the hits with Conrad in the behind the glass. We got Mark Becker and our dear friend Carlton Huffman. I do want to talk a little bit about, we talked about the military and the great This Could Have Been a Memo meeting with the Secretary of Defense, because that's what it's called. What did you think of that spectacle?
Or Department of War, or whatever they're calling it.
Which is, okay, so this is funny. I mentioned this last week, and as with a party that hates, like, the pronouns, we have the Secretary of Defense, you know, choosing a preferred pronoun for the department. Now, it's the Department of War. Please call the Department of War. So he, you know, they hate the pronouns, but please make sure you call the Department of War. I thought that's...
As with it.
Yeah.
As with everything with them, everything is projection.
Yes.
But I will say, in a time, and I think I've mentioned it in previous appearances, we are in the world situation. We are in the most dangerous time since the 1930s. I went to the National World War II Museum in New Orleans over the summer.
All right.
And they have a great display about the lead up and just how preventable it was before we stumbled into the greatest conflagration in world history.
Yeah.
But when we got China basically attempting to harass ships in the South China Sea of every nation, when we've got Ukraine and Russia going at it, we've got the situation in Israel in the Middle East, let's invite every flag officer and general from around the world to basically uproot themselves at a moment's notice so that they could get a lecture in physical fitness and the mission statement of the United States military. Right. And I would like to say, memo to Pete Hegseth, the mission statement for the United States military is the document they swear allegiance to, which is the Constitution.
Yes.
But you have somebody who was at most a major, who at most commanded a battalion, lecturing people with so much life experience.
Yeah.
And with little sense of shame or irony on his part. I mean, a man who wants to lecture people about physical appearance whenever he has a makeup studio set up in the Pentagon just so that he can look pretty for the TV cameras. And then you have Trump come in there and lumber on. But basically using that forum, and this is the dangerous part of that appearance, is he turned it into basically a Trump rally where he is lecturing these generals about his political enemies, how horrible Biden and Obama were and how great he is. I mean, and to the generals' credit, they were polite, but they were
stoic.
Not ones to buy into it. I mean, yeah, stoic is the exact right word for it. But the fact is that... And Trump said this in the first term, and this is the whole thing that we were warned about. He wants the military to basically be his personal toy, the much the same way that he thinks that the Justice Department is his law enforcement. He thinks the military is the president's military to use at his whim. And whenever he said, we are going to use American cities as training grounds for the United States military. And this is the other dangerous aspect of this is while we're having the military focused on our fellow citizens, we're also having the FBI over a quarter of all the field agents in the FBI
are
focused on immigration instead of counterterrorism or against organized crime. And once again, we just saw in New Orleans at the beginning of the year, we saw an ISIS-inspired terrorist attack on Bourbon Street. So, and we just saw it in England the other day. It was an ISIS-inspired car attack. So terrorism and is then, still out there.
Was it Germany, or there was a thwarted attack as well?
I mean,
this is not going away.
9/11, international terrorism is still out there and still a danger to the homeland. And while we're having the military focused on our fellow citizens, you've got China, North Korea, Iran, and Russia just looking at this like, okay, we could not have asked for a better deal than getting this guy back in office, because he's having, and Trump said it explicitly, it's like, I'm not worried about China. I'm not worried about Russia. The enemy that we need to worry about is the enemy within.
Yeah. What a chilling thing to say, though.
And that's the thing. I think that we have been so conditioned as a media and just as a public to Trump doing this every day. But and that's one thing that authoritarians like to do. They like to condition us. It's like whenever you're boiling the frog, you don't turn the water up too high. You just turn it up a little bit at a time. And next thing you know, you're having frog legs for dinner. But that is where we are in the United States of America in 2025, that while we have seen some successes and some resistance to him and some court wins to him, I mean, bringing back Abrego Garcia from that hellhole in El Salvador, that was a big win. But what we are still looking at the end of the day is that the Republican Party as a structure has basically acquiesced completely to whatever he wants, even when it comes to the Epstein files. And then we've got a Supreme Court that has once again acquiesced and given him basically immunity from prosecution and broad presidential power without any guardrails being put on him.
Well, and what's frustrating to me too is like, if you point this out and you talk about, hey, you know, the assault on freedom of speech, that's messed up. The idea that you're going to send troops to the middle of cities, that's messed up. When you talk about not swearing in someone who won an election just because you don't want to, like, that's messed up. All of these things are, if Biden did like half of one of these things, oh my God, Fox News would talk about this for months. Sean Hannity would lose his mind. That would be on his monologue every day for 6 months. And if we talk about it and say, boy, you know, this is not okay, then we have Trump derangement syndrome and everything, and we just don't understand humor, or we don't understand Donald Trump. It's like, hold on. No, we understand that this is a march towards something that, dude, I didn't even want to know where we're headed.
And I will sit there and say that, once again, projection is everything with these people, because the one thing they would always characterize, whether it's Never Trump Republicans or former Republicans like you and myself, whether it is Democrats or liberals of the left, they always basically said that we all think the same thing.
Yes.
We all recite the same talking points. But in the reality is that you look at their messaging machine, I mean, like Pravda, the East German propaganda machine, North Korea, they could not hardly ask for a better propaganda machine than what you have in the Rupert Murdoch-aligned media, talk radio, and you increasingly see it in these podcasts. I mean, the late Charlie Kirk, I mean, his assassination notwithstanding, I mean, he knew how to drive a message.
He was incredibly effective.
You saw it in the response to his assassination. But you can also see, too, just how dark it is getting whenever you've got Tucker Carlson out there and Candace Owens pushing anti-Semitism, while at the same time the Trump administration is cracking down on universities, allegedly for anti-Semitism. So just cognitive dissonance does not matter to them, once again, as long as they are winning the political argument and winning political power to crush their enemies. Logic does not apply.
Well, I didn't even touch on that. That slipped my mind. If you want these federal funds, you're going to teach things that are aligning with my agenda. What the hell? Holy crap.
After everything with critical race theory, after everything with the DEI, and just the whole need that we needed academic freedom, we needed a counterpoint to all these lefty professors that are indoctrinating people. But at the same time, like you've got Prager University basically infiltrating the curriculum of all these places. And you see it in like a lot of these red states where there is no Democrat opposition really to speak of in the legislature. They're basically trying to have the curriculum dictated by places like Prager University. That, I mean, it is something that is getting very spooky out there, very scary. But I just would tell your listeners, as dark as it feels, I mean, we still have the opportunity, especially in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You'll have another state Supreme Court race coming up. And if y'all are able to win that race now that Rebecca Bradley has taken herself out of the running, that will set everything up very nicely for y'all to keep the governor's mansion and hopefully take one or both houses of the legislature next November.
So as we're talking to Carlton Huffman, you were a pretty high level operative. And so you know politics, you know this. Put on your operative hat or your strategery hat, if you could. If you were advising the Democratic Party, what would you say they should be doing in both fighting this and also, effectiveness and preparing for what's to come? What should Democrats, because they're getting a lot of crap for like, you're not doing anything. You're sitting on your hands. We talked about that a little bit. What should they do?
Well, I would say I agree with what they're doing in D.C. right now. Holding the line on these Obamacare subsidies is a great thing because, I mean, as much as I thought that it was bad law, and I will still have my critiques with the law, if those subsidies run out, we'll see healthcare premiums double for people, if not go up even more so than that. So at times you do have to go at Trump, but at the end of the day, what was effective in 2006 and in 2018, whenever the Democrats were in tough midterm elections that they rode to success, you have to just point out those kitchen table issues where people are getting hurt. It's like you're paying more for groceries, your health care is getting more expensive, you're not seeing any relief from inflation, and oh, by the way, there's a soldier outside your door right now, and you just sit there and ask, is this the United States of America that you voted for in 2024? And I think that you can make the case to a lot of these soft Trump voters who just saw the Democrats as too woke, who saw the Democrats as not focused on the economy, and who were basically, I mean, you had Biden and company telling folks that inflation was transitory and that Bidenomics was working. You have to basically sit there and point out all the fallacies in what Trump is saying, and you have to come up with populist ideas like telling voters that if the government shuts down, Congress shouldn't get paid, and nobody else who is elected or congressionally confirmed in the executive branch, they shouldn't get paid either. And oh, by the way, whenever we got Trump with this crypto scheme out there, we need to ban insider trading for members of Congress and also members of the executive branch. Basically, going at those things like taking Trump out of the equation, taking Republican Democrat out of the equation, you put those issues up, almost 70 to 80% of Americans are going to agree on those issues. And that's the thing that Newt Gingrich did in 1994. You find those issues where 70 to 80% of the American public is on board, and you make that your platform, and you go at the opposition on all those points, because the Republicans are not going to sit there and say that we need to ban insider trading when you've got Donald Trump raking in billions. They won't say it by name, but they will still not do anything to affect his bottom line or their bottom line. And whenever you do that, the American people will see they're on their side and they're on Trump's side. They're not on my side.
Right. So do you think sticking with we're going to let their actions speak for themselves, is that good?
Yeah. I mean, you've got to go at them. You basically have to, and this is a hard thing to do whenever you've got a minority in both houses of Congress, but it did work for them in 2006 and in 2018. They basically pointed out the hypocrisy of, at the time, the Bush folks, whenever they said that they were going to clean up Congress, and you had members getting convicted for insider trading in 2018. You had Republicans who were getting convicted for financial fraud.
Do you want to stick around for one more segment? You got 7 minutes? All right, sweet. We're gonna continue the conversation here with Carlton Huffman, because I want to talk about this, and then also I want to hear who's waiting in the wings on the right, because I want to talk about that and hear what your thoughts are. Stick around. We got Carlton Huffman here on the Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker on the Civic Media Radio Network.
We don't get Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Are National Guard troops generally trained in law enforcement? No. National Guard troops like those President Donald Trump deployed to American cities in recent months to crack down on crime are not generally trained in law enforcement. For example, police officers in Washington, D.C. receive 21 training modules in criminal procedure, but Guard members receive none. Their primary training is focused on crowd control. Milwaukee's police union president suggested troops should be sent to Wisconsin's largest city. Governor Tony Evers called National Guard troops the, quote, wrong people, unquote, for fighting crime. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
When severe weather hits and the power goes out, do you have a plan? For reliable power and peace of mind, propane can do that. It only takes about 10 seconds for a propane-powered generator to restore power to your home. So no matter what Mother Nature has in store, you know you're prepared. Learn more at WIPGA.org. This message is sponsored by your local propane provider and the Wisconsin Propane Education and Research Council.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The Trump administration confirmed in September it is sharing driver's license and Social Security information among federal and state agencies from a massive database of personal and voter data. A class action lawsuit by voters and pro-voter groups has been filed to stop it. Since May, 38 states have received requests to turn over voter registration and voting records, according to the Brennan Center for Justice. As of October 1st, the only state to have complied is Indiana. Eight states which refused to comply have now been sued by the Trump Department of Justice. The administration reportedly repurposed an existing U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services database for verifying immigration status called Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlements, or the SAVE system. NPR reported in September that the immigration status of 33 million voters had been checked using the database. The new lawsuit contends, quote, Congress passed the Privacy Act of 1974 specifically to prevent the government from creating formal or de facto national databanks or centralized federal information systems that would consolidate sensitive personal information of Americans stored at separate agencies, unquote. The voters and groups are asking the court for an injunction prohibiting the administration from using personal data not allowed by the Privacy Act. We've linked the complaint from AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Another one.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. Oh, appreciate all you guys sticking around. If you have, some comments, I'd love reading texts or emails and all that kind of stuff. Find us at civicmedia.us. Share the show, like the show, trying to grow the show as well. But we've got Carlton Huffman here, former GOP operative. And I know you're still close with, I'm not going to name names, but I know you are still close with some national figures that are big in the party. Looking forward, you know, who's the next Trump? Can there be someone that takes this movement and, you know, is it going to be like the Diet Coke version or what happens next?
And it's one of those things that it's hard to look ahead 3 years.
I know.
You can see the people who are already jockeying. You can see the people who want it. And these are some of kind of like the, if you're a Mean Girls movie fan, look at the Gretchen Wieners of the world right here. But I mean, you've got a number of figures. I mean, obviously J.D. Vance wants it really bad.
Yes.
Ted Cruz, he wants it really bad.
You think?
He's making moves to that effect. I mean, he's trying to...
He got his butt kicked by Tucker Carlson, which was weird. That was so weird. I'm watching this, and I'm like, get him, Tucker! You know, like,
Politics makes for strange bedfellows.
Yeah, ask Marjorie Taylor Greene.
She's one that you should keep your eye on. I mean,
for real?
As odious as she can be in many ways, I mean, she has probably distilled like the America First agenda down on a policy manner, and is never underestimate her ability to get attention. I mean, and for some of your left of center listeners, that might sound like, how in the world could you possibly say that? Well, you look from the conservative side of things, a right of center perspective, people think the same thing about AOC. Yet AOC on the Democrat side is probably the id for a lot of people.
Yep.
And so I would keep an eye on Marjorie Taylor Greene for the future, that she has a possible. I mean,
can she get over Jewish space lasers?
Trump got over a lot worse than that.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. Well, yeah, I was on a round table that, and I famously said on live TV, Trump will never be president. I said that, and yeah. I was like, that's, it'll never happen. Well,
and trust me, she is one that I would hate to see get in there, but she is one that she gets a lot of people excited. And it's the one thing that you're seeing on the right, and I kind of hinted at it earlier. I mean, you're seeing Tucker Carlson, you're seeing Candace Owens, you're seeing Nick Fuentes, of all people. I mean, for your listeners who might not be familiar with them, this guy's a self-proclaimed white supremacist, a white nationalist. And
so bad.
He has a following that... people are not, even supposedly mainstream people now, like Megyn Kelly, they're not willing to take these extreme folks in the party on. And so that's where the energy is. And so you're going to get somebody like a Marjorie Taylor Greene from that segment of the party who is likely going to carry the standard forward, unless we just see a complete like implosion, which we used to be able to see that in politics. But as tribal as things have become, people are willing to go down with the ship all the way to the very end before they give up on their guy, because that would mean giving the other side a win.
It's wild. I think it was Michael Steele I had on, who was the former RNC chair. And we talked off the record. And I know I can say this because he's talked about this on his programs too. But there was, and he was part of this, a group that were ready to kind of pick up the pieces. If Donald Trump lost, that party was going to implode. And there were people that were, you know, hey, we're constitutional Republicans. We still are conservatives. We still have those beliefs. But we're not like total a-holes that, like, you know, and so... like, it's wild how they were seconds from disaster, and now here we are talking about who's going to take over and who's the heir apparent.
Yeah, and once again, I still say do not discount the Trump 2028 scenario out.
How would they do that?
I mean, like I said, I mean, you'd have state legislators who would just put him on the ballot and basically dare the Supreme Court to tell them no, and sit there and defy it and go right up to the line, because people would say that's a fantastical scenario. I mean, look where we are here in October, all this time in. I mean, we've got troops in the streets. We've got Congress basically rolling over and giving Trump whatever he wants. The Supreme Court saying he's immune from prosecution.
Yeah.
I mean, the man is building a ballroom on the side of the White House. Yeah. You think he only wants to use it for 2 years? I might be engaging in hyperbole, or once again, they could say I've got CDS, but I did not picture him leading an assault on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. I could see things were leading up in that direction, but I couldn't have predicted how it went down. The worst case scenario keeps on going further and further down the field, and it doesn't seem like anything is arresting that decline.
That's the thing. You talk about, we're accused of TDS and Trump derangement syndrome, but like everything that happens, it's like, no, he's not going to do that. No, he's not going to do that. He freaking does it.
I mean, he, like I said, whenever they said he would never use the Justice Department to go after his political enemies, I mean, James Comey would like a word on that one. And I guarantee you, James Comey will not be the last person that they indict.
He says he wanted to arrest
next November.
Yeah, he says he wants to arrest the governor of Illinois. Yeah. What?
And that's the thing. We have seen this in other countries in history before, and we saw it in a manner
doesn't
in our
end
own
well.
Country. But when it happened in our own country, it was the 1850s, and we know what happened in the 4 years after that.
Right. Like, famously doesn't end well. We got like 30 seconds left. How would you, what would people do if they want to, if they see this and say, well, I need to do something about it, what can they do?
go to the Democrat Party of Virginia and Democrat Party of New Jersey's websites, sign up to volunteer, call, send text messages, anything you can do to help us get a big victory in New Jersey and Virginia, and then sign up with your state parties in whatever state that you're in. You've got local elections coming up and also the spring election in Wisconsin coming up with a big state Supreme Court race. Wherever you are, get involved with your gubernatorial and down ballot candidates, because Wisconsin has a chance to sweep the table next year if they play their cards right.
Well, I know we're going to be talking about it with you many times between now and then. I appreciate your time, Carlton Huffman. Thank you all for listening. This was an awesome show, and we'll see you next week here on The Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker on the Civic Media Radio Network. Take care. Just one line.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. The president's heading to the Middle East later today, where he'll likely be greeted warmly.
President Trump will travel to Israel, where he's expected to deliver an address to Parliament ahead of a crucial deadline for Hamas to release the remaining hostages being held in Gaza, both dead and alive. There's been cautious optimism on both sides. This could mean the end of the war.
I think you're going to have tremendous success, and Gaza's going to be rebuilt. This is peace in the Middle East. And it is a beautiful thing.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said today Israel has achieved tremendous victories, but he warned the fight is not over. Tens of thousands of Palestinians are working their way home to northern Gaza now. From East Jerusalem, CBS's Deborah Patta says many of them will find only rubble where their homes once stood.
Even though home is unrecognizable for so many, Palestinians...